privacy on company devices. The Intel ME and AMD PCP, all that kind of controlling software, the new FairBuds that just came out, privacy respecting speech recognition on Windows. Those are our questions this week. So welcome to the Q&A for Surveillance Report 174. This is where our patrons at $5 a month or more can ask us questions and we will relay them and answer them on the air. A quick update before we jump in. We're going to make a quick change. Again, we're dialing things in. We're not making major changes. Previously, the rule was you have to ask a question on the Q&A segments, but since those are going to be coming out midweek, we figure we'll open that up to the actual news episodes as well. Just so that way you guys have as much time as possible to get a question in, because previously that's how it was. The news would drop on Sunday, you'd have all week. So we're going to go back to that. You can ask them on the news episodes. If you prefer, you can keep asking them on the Q&A episodes. Either way, we'll count it. We're going to start off with Mr. Campbell, 999, one of our regulars. Thanks for sticking with us. Mr. Campbell says, what steps would you take to be as private as you can on a company laptop? Specifically, it's a macOS machine. I haven't used macOS yet as any sort of daily driver, so I'm unsure what steps to take exactly. I'm already set on using hardened Firefox as my browser. I cannot install Homebrew or anything. Therefore, I cannot auto-update LibreWolf. I'll be honest, not everybody is in this position. This is actually the first time I've been at my day job. They issue us laptops. My personal logic is if it's a company device, I'll use it however they want me to. I don't care. I use Edge. I use Outlook. I haven't really done any hardening on it. I just don't care. It's their device. And I mean, I'm still using things that are on my, you know, I put a uBlock Origin Lite on Edge. I use good passwords with my password manager. That said, if you do want to do those things, on the new oil, we have a list of recommended settings for macOS. I think it's a little bit out of date because I haven't been able to get my hands on a newer Mac device lately, but we have some recommended settings that can help you harden things, so you can take a look at that and try that. You've already mentioned you're going to switch to Firefox. You could also try the Mulvad browser or Brave if that works better. And I think I also list this on the new oil. There's like Little Snitch or Lulu. You could try some of those things. Be careful not to block any of their stuff, they being your job, because they probably might be a little upset about that. But yeah, I would just look for like areas that you can make changes. I mean, that's all I got.
Nate has this like quitter mentality, but I have a winner mentality. And no, I'm just playing.
That's fair.
No, fair. No. I fully agree. Like, I do think that like this is not a place. I mean, I just took a new job and I got a company laptop essentially, but it's not like run by the company. I can pretty much run whatever software I want on it, but it's exclusively used for that job. Same thing though, it's like set up and configured very differently from my main machine. And that's the beauty of having a dedicated device, is it's a device where you can comfortably not be as private on it because of the nature of the information that's on the device is not exclusive to you. So it really depends what the information is. We say the same thing on our ends about like students. Students, it's a common question of like, oh, I'm going to a university. They require this software. How do I use it privately? And it's like, well, you're a student and you're in like the school's ecosystem. There's only so much you can do. The best thing I would suggest doing is keeping it away from your personal life, having a dedicated device just for schooling that just has all your school stuff on there. It doesn't matter if it's Outlook, doesn't matter if it's other whatever crap software that exists, but it's only going to have student data. So there's no jeopardizing your personal data. And I think it's the same thing with companies. Just keep it compartmentalized. And you have the gold standard of compartmentalization, which is dedicated devices. So if you have a company laptop, I feel like you're already winning. And as long as you keep your personal stuff off of there, that's all you need to do. Everything else, like Nate said, is just, you can do a bonus. Like, sure, if you want to be more privacy respecting with company information, sure, go ahead. You'd be more concerned about it than I am actually on this device, because it's, again, company data. So it's like, yeah, everything I'm doing on there, it's for the company. It's going to be public info. It's not actually like my personal life and my personal information, because it doesn't exist there in the first place.
Actually, one quick thing did just pop into my head is threat modeling still applies here. I will generate secure passwords and type them in, even though they are a pain in the butt. You know, 3YJ! Exclamation point. Like, it sucks, but I do that. And it's because my threat model is I don't want to be the guy who puts ransomware on the company device. They already have my real name. They already have my social security number because they pay me. I'm a W-2 employee. I can't do anything about them. I can't control what the payroll people are doing. I can't control who they're sharing that data with. All I can do is on my end, I can make sure I'm using good passwords. I'm changing my passwords when they tell me to. I'm not putting sketchy software on the device. I'm making sure that if anything goes wrong, I'm not the one that they're going to be able to point fingers at. And I know that's probably a little bit of a hostile, selfish way of looking at it. I don't use it to browse the web. Like, I place orders at stores that are relevant to the work we do. Like, I do some work on it, but it's not the same as, like, I'm not doing any personal banking on there. Like, I'm just not worried about privacy in that sense.
I'm going to shorten up the next question a little bit, and it's from David Johnson. Pretty much David's going to ask about things that run on more firmware level, like things like CPU, software. I know we hear a lot about Intel ME, AMD's version of that, and all these other, I guess, bits of software that run on your chips and whatnot. And they ask, do we activate these technologies? Do we disable them? Do we lock them down? Do we avoid devices with them? Is it something that we need to be concerned about? I guess on my end, I'll start. I have seen the concerns. I've read about the concerns. I've read the theories about the concerns. Some people are convinced these are just backdoors. But the reality that I've seen is that they have genuine functionality that some companies actually use. They're more corporate-oriented technologies, a lot of them. Anything does increase your attack surface if it introduces a feature, and especially in this situation, it's definitely going to be a victim of vulnerabilities. So I don't think if you don't use the features, there's any harm in disabling it. You know, I know Purism, System 76, they have devices that do disable that kind of stuff if that's something you really care about. It's not something I'm particularly looking at, though, on my end. For me, it falls in the camp of like very high level hypothetical risk versus one of many, I guess, actual risks that I do care about on my end. But if you find a way to disable it and you find a way to take care of it, I think it is better just from a basic attack surface perspective more than anything. But I'm not going to be super pressed, and I'm not going to necessarily even recommend it to a majority of people, especially because it's actually really hard to do if people have looked into it. It's not easy. And the work that Purism and System 76 put into doing it is not easy, actually.
You completely nailed it. So I did write a blog post a while back. It's called The Not So Scary Truth About Intel ME. And it's about exactly this. There's a lot of straight up FUD. Like if you go to, it's the Wikipedia page for Intel ME. If you look under like the controversy section or whatever, they straight up say like EFF has called it a backdoor. And if you click on the source they reference, the word backdoor doesn't appear a single time. The EFF does not call it a backdoor. They do have concerns with it. They're not a fan of it, but mostly from like a not right to repair, but you know, like own your device perspective, which is fair. My point being like there's just tons of like straight up FUD out there and just straight up lies and exaggeration.
Which I don't understand, because it's totally valid to come forward and be like, hey, we have concerns. Like the EFF did, I'm sure, talking about how it's something that's exploitable. It introduces risks to the consumer, and most consumers don't even use the feature. So like those are all valid things to bring up. But the jump from that to it being an intentional thing and like all the stuff that goes along with it is a totally different claim. But you don't even have to make that claim to still make people concerned about it, is what I don't understand. Because I do think it's an issue.
David's right. There have been several vulnerabilities found in this software or firm, whatever this is. You know, so I totally get it. I also agree with the whole take of like, well, you know, it's not a scandal until it is. And I think that's totally fair. But I think you really hit the nail on the head when you're like, yeah, but what are we going to do about it? Because, and I mentioned this in my blog post, is like, there's like all these scripts that you can download from GitHub that will disable it. But number one, that's super sketchy. And number two, like, you can brick your device if you do it wrong. And I just don't think it's worth the risk. So you could buy from like System 76. I made a whole video. I tried to buy from System 76. It ended up not working for me because I use Cubes and I use Windows. I had issues on both. If you don't use either of those, I recommend you look into System 70. They do officially support Pop and Fedora. So if you use either of those, you should be good to go. Purism, I don't recommend. Henry's got a whole video why over on TechLore if you want. Just go look that up. Or better yet, just go look at their page on the Better Business Bureau.
For the record, all of my experiences with Purism that were all overwhelmingly negative and terrible are with the phone. I can't comment on their computers. I've heard better things about their computers. People actually receive their computers. Really good start.
That's what I was about to ask. And just while we're on the topic, for the record, I like System 76. Like, my wife uses Pop OS on her laptop. She loves it. I wish we had more options. And if we did, I would be happy to promote them. But yeah, I think the risks outweigh the benefits for most people. And at this time, we don't have any direct evidence that it is actually a serious problem. I feel like you hit a point of diminishing returns. And I think it goes back to threat model. If you have a very high threat model, then yeah, maybe you should look into like one of those Linux devices where it's totally disabled and you can just run like the most basic version of Linux that doesn't need any of that, and it's fully open source. But I think for most people, it's probably a lot more work than it's worth.
And the thing I'll leave it with is just remember the context of us, like, having thousands of viewers and needing to make sure we give recommendations that apply to thousands of people. Maybe, like, one-on-one, if someone tells me their situation, I might actually be like, okay, no, for you, that makes sense to disable this. But for most people, it's kind of risky to recommend this for, again, like you said, very diminishing returns.
Our next question comes from M. What do you think of the Fairbuds that just came out last week? And do you think American companies will start releasing products with replaceable batteries anytime soon, or only if the government mandates it? In answer to your second question, only if the government mandates it. I don't have a very high opinion of companies. I don't think they have any incentive to, other than to follow the law. Thankfully, there does seem to be a bit of a push for right to repair in some parts of the US. So I'm hopeful, but I think it's going to be a long and slow process. As far as the Fairbuds specifically, I don't have an opinion because I don't think Fairphone stuff is available in the US. I don't have any like specific thoughts because I haven't been able to put my hands on it or do anything with it.
Yeah, I checked out the site while we were talking about the last question, and they seem really cool. And they're actually cheaper than like AirPod Pros. They're 150 euros about, which is pretty good compared to the competition, and they're replaceable, so you could keep them a lot longer. So I think the value proposition for this is really solid. And they have all the modern features like noise cancellation and all the other fun stuff, sweat and water resistance. So it looks really cool. I wish I could get my hands on one as well. Also in the US, I do have a Fairphone, but that's because Yoda OS sent one to me as kind of a workaround solution. But if it wasn't for that, then I wouldn't have any Fair devices. But I can't really speak to the Fairbuds. And I agree with Nate. I would love to see a company like Fairphone in the US, if not just Fairphone, have a US presence, because I think that there's just no one filling that market. Even if it's a small market in the US, I feel like it'd be pretty successful here in the States. But I don't think that most companies will want to do this because they have a pretty good system right now of just planned removal of their devices within 2 years. The last question is from Kevin, pretty much asking for a privacy-respecting product to replace Windows speech recognition to do active speech to text on Windows and on Linux would be a plus. They use Fudo voice input on their Google phone, but they can't simply find an alternative for desktop, and they prefer it to process on-machine like Fudo voice, no internet connection needed. I am sadly not very familiar with stuff like this. I'm not really familiar with accessibility alternatives, so it's not something I'm super familiar with. Have you ever stumbled on anything, Nate?
I have not, unfortunately. I was planning to turn this one over to the community and ask if people would leave recommendations in the comments. I don't use a lot of voice to text in general, but I do agree. I could see why people would want that.
And the thing, too, that's really hard for us, and I know it's like super crazy saying this, but like I wish I could, but I also don't know what kind of what tools and functions you need out of a speech to text tool for your specific situation, because I've never used Windows speech recognition, and I don't know if it's something that you need for accessibility purposes or just for general functionality. I can look on alternative2.net, but I don't know if that's going to match what you're looking for. I see this one called Whisper, which is open source and it's kind of freemium, and it also has Mac and Linux as well, is from what I can tell. So Mac, Windows, and Linux, it's called Whisper, audio transcription tool. So maybe that would work, but I feel like maybe that's something you've already heard of or it didn't work for a particular reason. So yeah, I agree with Nate. If the community has any tips here, that would be a big help, because this isn't something that either of us have really played with.
If you haven't tried alternative2.net, definitely start there. That's a good place. Yeah, we'll open that up to the community. If anybody has any recommendations, please go ahead and leave them in the comments. Hopefully someone will recommend something that works for you. Sorry we couldn't be of more help.
Oh, okay, so get this. Kevin, Fudo voice input that you use for Android, do you know what it's based on? It's based on the Whisper model. So you're actually using the Whisper model when you're using Fudo voice input on your Android device. So you could just use Whisper on desktop, because it's the same behind the scenes situation.
That was all the questions we had this week. Thank you very much to everyone who asked a question. If you would like to ask us a question on Surveillance Support 175, go ahead and head over to Patreon, where you can sign up for $5 a month or more. Again, you can leave your questions on this post. You can leave them on the upcoming news post that'll be out on Sunday. We'll go ahead and count them all moving forward. So thank you guys for watching. Thank you guys for keeping us going. And we will see you this weekend with some more news.